you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in County of Imperial, California, against Munoz. She ended there somewhere there. Proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, the issue in this case is whether it is permissible, consistent with principles of res judicata and the Anti-Injunction Act, for the federal court to enjoin enforcement of a groundwater exportation restriction in Mr. McDougall's use permit, when the California Supreme Court earlier ruled the restriction enforceable. If I may, before going to the facts of the case, I would like to briefly address the geographical setting for this case. In this court's recent opinion in Bryant versus Yellen, the court described the Imperial Valley as an area located south of the Salton Sea in southeastern California. It lies below sea level and is an arid desert in its natural state. That case, the 160-acre limitation case, dealt with lands in Imperial County which are within the irrigation district's boundaries and are irrigated. Mr. McDougall's parcel, however, lies on the west mesa of Imperial County, an area totally dependent on groundwater supplies. Going to the facts of the case, the California Supreme Court found Mr. McDougall estopped from challenging and thereby bound by the export restriction in his use permit, based on facts which showed that his predecessor, with counsel, agreed to the imposition of the export restriction, abided by it, and benefited from the limited permit as issued. Further, Mr. McDougall, when he purchased the property, was aware of the restriction. When Mr. McDougall went to the county officials and demanded removal of the export restriction, he was informed that he should make application for a new conditional use permit. Instead of applying for a use permit, Mr. McDougall simply defied the county authorities, entered the subject brokerage contract with respondent Munoz, and immediately as many as 44 tank trucks carrying 250,000 gallons a day began export of water to Mexicali, Mexico. One of the major allegations of the respondent's complaint is that enforcement of the subject export restriction will cause economic hardship to them by requiring them to go 8 miles further north in the county to the so-called Clifford Well to buy water for export. It's alleged that the price of water is higher at the Clifford Well, also in the county, eight miles
north. How far away is Mexicali from this well?
Approximately, I would say, 6 miles, mm-hmm. Your Honor. The well site.
So it'd be more than twice as far to the other well.
I think that's probably, well, the well is on Highway 98, which kind of parallels the border, and the Ocotillo Well is 8 miles north on Highway 98. Mm-hmm. I believe that the res judicata issue is the major issue in the case. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, of course, rejected the county's argument on res judicata by concluding that the McDougall decision is not a final judgment on the merits as to the respondent's cause of action. That's fundamentally incorrect.
Well, it was an estoppel
judgment, though, wasn't it?
Yes, it was an estoppel judgment, and I've indicated what the facts were substantiated in that estoppel.
And you and your res judicata argument is that not Mr. McDermott should be continue to be bound by that judgment, but his vendees
exactly
should be also be bound by that estoppel judgment.
Exactly. And Justice Wright, I will get to the privity question in a moment, if I may. But importantly,
well, you have to, I suppose.
Yes, indeed.
Yes.
Importantly, recognize that the Ninth Circuit did not even reach the privity issue. It simply concluded that this is not a final judgment on the merits as to the respondent's action. That can't be true, it seems to me.
Well, you could say it was true, but still the estoppel judgment should stand against these people.
I will get to that. Importantly, the issue of the enforceability of the export restriction was the central issue in the McDougall case. After 5 years of litigation, finally the California Supreme Court ruled it was enforceable. Indeed, the decision is based on
it
a stop.
It affirmed the injunction.
It affirmed that portion of the injunction. Now, on the issue of what is a final judgment on the merits for purposes of res judicata, Professor Moore indicates that a test is where there is a measure of identity so that the different judgment in the second action would destroy or impair rights or interests established by the first judgment. Here, Your Honors, the injunction issued by the district court robs the California Supreme Court's decision of all of its vitality and meaning. In one case, we've got the California Supreme Court concluding that the export restriction is enforceable. Now, a district court is telling the county officials that the export restriction must be enjoined. Seems to me that it's clear that the focal point made by the Ninth Circuit is erroneous and requires reversal. Now, going to the issue of privity. May I again remind the Court that the Ninth Circuit did not even reach the issue of privity. The last page of the Circuit Court of Appeals decision, there is a statement that indicates that assuming that the respondents are in privity, they would not be bound because of the prior conclusion on the cause of action issue. The record, however, establishes relationships between McDougall and the respondents, which I believe make it clear they should be regarded as being in privity with McDougall. First of all, there is the contractual relationship between respondent Munoz and McDougall. Munoz has been an integral part of the McDougall operation since its inception. The verified complaint in the federal action indicates that Munoz is the broker for sale of water to bottling companies in Mexicali.
Well, don't many courts disagree with the Ninth Circuit's rather limited definition of res judicata to as in limited to issues that had been litigated on their merits and say that it's any issue that was litigated or might have been litigated?
I think that's correct. Certainly in the reading I've done, the thrust of many writers' opinions is that you're to look at the substance, not just the form of the situation. And if there has been a meaningful relationship between the parties and those who would also be bound by the preclusionary rule, where they've had the opportunity to intervene and litigate the case, they should likewise be bound.
Weren't those other issues, though, presented in the state litigation? It's just that the state court didn't decide them. They were presented and tendered. The state court decided the case on estoppel.
That's correct.
Well, but isn't estoppel itself a substantive ground?
Yes, it is. The leading case there is Enterprise
Air. The Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit said it wasn't. So that is certainly a fair issue.
The case is clearly established that estoppel is an independent and adequate ground for.
Well, against McDermott, I suppose, at least.
Well,
or McDougal, or whatever his name is.
And I'm further suggesting that the respondents are in privity with McDougal. I've alluded to the contractual relationship. Furthermore, if I can draw the court's attention to page 16A of the appendix, specifically paragraph 4 of the complaint, the last phrase of that paragraph I'm referring to Roman numeral 4 on page 16A.
Right.
The last phrase reads, all other plaintiffs, i.e. Martinez and De Leon, herein are third-party beneficiaries of the contract between Guillermo Gallego Munoz and the defendant Donald Courtney McDougal Sr. So I think that there are interwoven interests here which are established in the record, and for purposes of privity, those relationships should suffice with other things. Now, additionally, these respondents actually had the opportunity to intervene in the state court litigation and or participate. And in fact, respondent Munoz did participate in the state court proceedings, and he argued as an amicus curiae before the California Supreme Court.
Could you have named him a party to your lawsuit?
I think the county might have. The problem with that, Your Honor, is conceivably there are hundreds of people who might have been named parties, namely.
But you think you could bind all of McDougal's customers on the privity theory?
On the facts of this case, yes. Now, the other major issue, I think, that bears on the privity issue is the fact that we're talking about the same piece of property and the identical rights. The respondents have not applied for a conditional use permit themselves. They are instead simply trying to challenge the export restriction in Mr. McDougal's permit. In reading Professor Vestal's Law Review article in the Iowa Law Review, cited in my brief, he talks about still another ground for binding non-parties, which is, I suppose, separate and apart from res judicata, and that involves a situation where these third parties' rights are derivative of the party to the lawsuit. Here, rights to sell water commercially from the well depend on the issuance of a permit to McDougal. Respondents' rights to purchase from McDougal for export are necessarily derivative of McDougal's, it seems to me.
Would you make the same argument if some new person in Mexico formed a water brokerage business, was not involved previously as a customer of this well, came in and said, I'd like to attack the zoning ordinance? Could you defeat his claim?
There is not a zoning ordinance here in effect.
I understand.
The use permit. I think that, yes, Your Honor, I think that the underlying...
So you really don't rely at all on the prior relationship between the Mexican broker and the property owner?
I rely extensively on the contractual relationship between McDougal and his broker, Munoz.
But you say the same argument would apply to someone who had no prior contractual relationship.
I think so. Going to the Anti-Injunction Act.
You say it isn't a, just to make it clear, this isn't a zoning ordinance, this is a restriction on the sale of water, as the court, as the Supreme Court said.
This is a land use permit, that is,
but it's a restriction on the sale of water.
Right, but right. It applies, what I was trying to say is it applies to a single parcel of property.
Yes.
There is no county-wide ordinance which restricts the application of water or any other product for that matter. That's indicated, it seems to me, by the pleadings, which indicate that the respondents can go 8 miles north and purchase water from a well there.
Would it make any difference to your case if there were a countywide restriction?
If there were a countywide restriction which the respondents were individually affected by, it would certainly, I would certainly believe under that set of circumstances, they could have standing to challenge the restriction. One of the cases cited by the Court of Appeal and the District Court is Hale versus BIMCO for the proposition that third-party strangers are not barred by reason of a state court adjudication from challenging, from subsequently challenging in the federal courts a statute. And it's arguably unconstitutional. If the county had an ordinance which had countywide application preventing export, an adjudication against McDougal, I don't think would bind third-party strangers separately and individually affected by that ordinance. Here, though, this permit runs with a particular parcel of land, the McDougal parcel. I think that under all of the circumstances taken into consideration, California litigation has got to once and for all, under the theory underlying res judicata, adjudicate the rights that flow from that piece of property. Were the county to purport to enact an ordinance that says, no, there will be simply no export, then I would think any number of individuals might achieve standing to challenge it. The Anti-Injunction Act, of course, prohibits the federal court from granting an injunction or staying a two-state proceedings in a state court except where expressly authorized by Congress or were necessary to aid in its jurisdiction. The Court of Appeals indicated that the Anti-Injunction Act did not have application because there were no proceedings pending, and further it relying on Hale versus BIMCO, indicated that if there were proceedings pending, nothing would prevent a third-party stranger from challenging a statute. Your Honors, I think that the California Supreme Court injunction contemplates ongoing jurisdiction in the court and inherent authority in the court to enforce the injunction. As shown, subsequently, there has actually been a contempt proceeding, a contempt judgment by the trial court judge against McDougal for having willfully violated the terms of the trial court injunction as affirmed by the California Supreme Court. Therefore, think that the preliminary injunction issued by the district court likewise violates the spirit of the Anti-Injunction Act. I think this court's recent decision in Vendo is analogous. That case, along with others, Hill versus Martin, make it clear that the Anti-Injunction Act's prohibition is broad and to be strictly construed, and that it applies to any stage of a state court's proceeding from the time of final judgment through enforcement.
Well, was McDougal held in contempt?
Yes, he was held in contempt.
But then the judgment was stayed, wasn't it?
The execution of the judgment was stayed, Your Honor.
And depending on how the Court of Appeals came out, it was stayed permanently.
That's correct. Execution was.
And well, now, so what does that mean about the injunction?
Well, it certainly doesn't indicate to me that the state courts have deferred making a determination, as, for example, was the case in Hale versus BIMCO, where the Florida State Supreme Court, before ever getting to final judgment, said...
Well, what the state court was at least saying as to McDougal, this injunction doesn't mean anything. He can violate it if he wants to.
The state court was aware, I think, Your Honor, that cross-contempt proceedings were also going on in the federal district court. And
well, I know, but they stated pending the outcome of this case.
State execution of the contempt judgment against McDougal.
And if McDougal won this, or if Munoz won this case, and McDougal was off the hook, then McDougal was off the hook, right?
I think that's correct.
So what does the injunction mean?
The injunction or
against
the,
McDougal?
The injunction against McDougal is clearly a final judgment, but. California
well,
Supreme.
It's, but it's been rendered, it certainly isn't the creature that it was if McDougal can violate it at will.
Well, I think the final judgment of the California Supreme Court has been all but emasculated by the preliminary injunction issued by the Superior Court.
Well, the Superior Court is the one who issued the injunction in the beginning.
That's right. And its judgment has been affirmed by the California Supreme Court.
Well, that wouldn't keep the Superior Court from setting it aside.
The Superior Court, Your Honor, has shown no intention to set aside its judgment.
Except,
to the contrary.
Except insofar as it tells McDougal you don't need to obey it.
No, except insofar as it has withheld execution the contempt judgment against McDougal until a final determination by the United States Supreme Court. Finally, the Court of Appeal directed that the Ninth Circuit should determine the, quote, export question in accordance with Hughes versus Oklahoma. We contend that there is no export question before the court, and that the judgment of the California Supreme Court, based as it was on estoppel, is furnished an independent, adequate state court basis for the judgment. But assuming arguendo that there is some standing in the respondents, we wish to point out that Hughes versus Oklahoma should not have application because, first of all, in Hughes versus Oklahoma involved a direct appeal challenging an Oklahoma statute to this court. There were neither res judicata nor anti-injunction action issues in that case. Finally, we have cited the Hudson County Water Company case wherein Justice Holmes upheld a New Jersey statute which did prevent diversion of a stream from outside the state, and we think that might be analogous. Here, if the court were to ever get to the actual issue, the merits of the export restriction, we think that Hudson versus Hudson County Water presents an independent ground for sustaining an export restriction of this nature.
The merits are not really before this court in this posture of the case, are they?
I believe not. Your Honors, I would like to reserve some time for rebuttal.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the Court. I think that we have to keep a couple of things in mind at the very outset of this case. The respondents are three citizens of the Republic of Mexico who have gone into a federal district court with a straightforward question to that federal district court. Federal district court, there's an export ban that says that after McDougal has acquired water, pumped it from the ground, stored it in his storage tanks, McDougal cannot sell that water to me, a Mexican citizen, because in granting the conditional use permit, for no reasons relating to land use, intensity of use, or anything, the County of Imperial has simply decided to ban the export of that water from that particular parcel.
Do you suppose would there be any question of the standing of these plaintiffs to bring a suit, quite apart from the question of research?
I don't believe so. I believe you might be hinting at the question as to whether or not a foreigner, a non-citizen of the United States, might bring an action.
These are just three probably thousands, if not millions, of potential buyers.
Well, I would suggest that in our allegations we have pointed out that these particular plaintiffs are lawfully within the United States. And once you're lawfully within the United States, it seems to me that the Constitution talks in terms of persons are protected, and it doesn't say citizens of this country. And it seems to me that person...
Well, we're talking about the Commerce Clause of the Constitution.
That's correct. And I believe that a person lawfully in this country exercising a right as a purchaser ought to be able to invoke the basic fabric of this nation, the Commerce Clause, in a federal district court.
Well, Mr. Kronberg, what if your clients had litigated the precise same issue that you say they're now seeking to litigate here in the federal district court up through the California state court system, saying that this violates the federal constitution? The Supreme Court of California had ruled against them, certiorari denied here. Would you say that they would have the right to start all over again in the district court?
I think that that question is answered by principles of res judicata. And if res judicata would apply because they were in those proceedings, then I would agree with your statement. However, I'm somewhat concerned that, for example, I believe in one opinion of this court, I believe it was Huffman versus Pursue Limited, there was some language to the effect that a litigant in the state court might come back in a federal court and challenge. But that was a very limited statement in that decision, and I don't believe that I would press that point here.
You weren't in the state proceeding.
No, we weren't. That was my next comment. My clients, and that's something I wish I could start over in this case, instead of labeling it Guillermo Gallego Munoz as the first party, I would have put Juan de León in, because Juan de León wasn't even in business when the state court proceedings were going forward. And my point is, my clients, these respondents, have never had a day in a court, be it a state court or a federal court. They've raised an issue. At some point, it has to be answered. And turning...
Can I return for a moment to Justice Stewart's question? Supposing instead of a total restriction on export, there had been a restriction on, say, you can only pump for 4 hours a day, something less clearly directed in a person in your capacity. Would the Avendi have standing to come in before the county and challenge that kind of restriction on the ground that if he produced more water, maybe I could buy more?
No, I don't think so, because I subscribe to the view that there is a legitimate police power in local and state government to regulate land use. And I think that what makes this case so unique is the direct, explicit holding of the California Supreme Court that this particular restriction is not land use oriented.
No, my question didn't go to the merits of
the
restriction, but
rather
whether a customer of the property owner would have standing to say, I want to complain about this because it affects my business. It's a standing question that I think we're seeking guidance.
I would think that if that customer were raising it under the Commerce Clause, I believe it would have standing, and I would just revert to my position that is, if you are in this country lawfully discharging a business, you have a right to invoke the protections afforded in the Constitution.
Well, could anybody raise it.
Could anybody
who lives in Mexico be a potential plaintiff in this suit?
I think you're going to have to show some interest.
Or anybody who lives in Canada?
I think you'd have to show some interest in the outcome of the litigation. This court has
held the interest would be I want to buy water, or I may want to buy water sometime.
Well, I think arguably, yes. Let's put it in another light. What if I am driving from California to Texas, and I have an old-type automobile with a radiator, and I want to stop in at McDougal Well and fill up my radiator. McDougal says, no, you're taking the water outside of the county.
Could you be a plaintiff in the federal court?
It seems to me that I would have the right to bring that.
Because
I have been directly harmed by a regulation of a governmental entity that has said that...
Anybody who alleges that he now wants to or may in the future want to buy water is a potential plaintiff in the federal court, is that it?
Well, I don't know that I would read
that
it that far.
That is anybody who does not live in the United States.
I think that somebody who can show a
relationship. Or does not live in the Imperial Valley, rather, in this county.
Correct. I would say that someone who can allege and show that they have an interest in raising the issue can raise it. I don't think that you could come into the federal court and say, well, I might want to purchase water sometime.
Well, that's his interest. He wouldn't be in the federal court if he weren't interested.
That's correct.
Well, doesn't that open the door to Mr. McDougall to just find somebody, kind of a straw man, to go into federal district court and relitigate what he's already lost in the Supreme Court of California?
I don't think the issue was lost in the Supreme Court of the State of California. I think the Supreme Court of the State of California specifically refused to rule on the issue. And I think that if we are going to assert that McDougall went out and found straw men and somehow manufactured a lawsuit, that is an element of proof in the trial. And I have to point out, we're here on a preliminary injunction. There is nothing in this record to show any connection between these plaintiffs and McDougall, save three isolated acts.
16A, that was read to us before, paragraph 4. You said there's no connection.
Okay.
I
point out to you that is in the second cause of action wherein Munoz is seeking specific performance of his agreement with McDougall. And in that sense...
But is that a true statement?
That is a true statement. For purposes of res judicata, though, I don't think that we can say because I am going to be the buyer, I have automatically been foreclosed because the seller has somehow been foreclosed in a state proceeding which did not reach the issue. I think we open a dangerous door if we tell government, local government, that it may grant and deny land use permits or any kind of permits for reasons wholly unrelated to the local purpose, land use. And if a seller is somehow stopped to raise or challenge that issue, that the whole world is barred from ever challenging it. I would suspect that would open doors to novel methods of discrimination against international commerce, state commerce, and a host of other things that I think are protected activities. If I might...
Well, the Commerce Clause doesn't, by its terms, protect any activities. It just gives the Congress of the United States the power to regulate commerce among the several states or international commerce or commerce with the Indian tribes, period.
That's correct.
It doesn't say anything about persons or protections or...
And in its self-executing form, the way restrictions imposed by states and local governments are raised, they are raised by those who are harmed. And that recognizes, I think, that a state has a right to regulate in an area that may impact interstate and foreign commerce. As this court pointed out in Hughes versus Oklahoma, if you're going to regulate in that area, then you better do it in a manner that is not discriminatory or overly burdensome on interstate and foreign commerce. Here we've got a flat, outright ban.
In Hughes against Oklahoma, it was the person who wanted to take the minnows out of the state who was the plaintiff, wasn't it?
That's correct.
So, in the other words, he was in the shoes of McDougall in this case.
No, he would be in the shoes of perhaps Munoz.
No, it wasn't the purchaser.
Well, let's look at
all this. It was the person who wanted to take the minnows out of the state, wasn't it? Wasn't that Hughes?
Correct. What about Altus, Oklahoma versus Carr? It was the purchaser there who wanted to take the water out of Texas. And I think that decision stands for the proposition that the state of Texas could not enforce an export ban. And the residents of Altus, Oklahoma brought that suit. I think in reviewing this decision, it's very important to keep in mind that these parties in this case have not had their day in court. They have not had an opportunity to participate in the state proceedings. One of them didn't even exist in the business. And it seems to me that in order to have res judicata in this case, we have to have two things. One, a final judgment on the merits, which when the California Supreme Court says it's not going to decide the issue, in my view, does not constitute a decision on the merits. And the next thing we've got to have is some relationship between the parties and the party that appeared in the California court. in order to hold him and bind them as privies. Now, privity is kind of a shorthand method of saying simply that we think there's enough connection between these people that they ought to be bound by the judgment. And one of the things...
Supposing in the California court, state court litigation, Mr. McDougall thought of the Commerce Clause argument, but his lawyer told him that this just is too much of a long shot to raise. We won't bother with it right now. And the thing went all the way through the state to the state Supreme Court, and many issues were decided, but that one wasn't. And then there was a petition for rehearing, and the Supreme Court of California said, no, you're too late. Would you say that issue is not res judicata?
It would be as to McDougall, who participated in that litigation. I think that with respect to parties who were not party to the state litigation, we're talking about collateral estoppel, and we're talking about issues that were actually decided, issues that we might use as a sword or a shield against those non-parties. And for purposes of collateral estoppel, it seems to me that the only items that might be asserted for that purpose are issues that were actually decided. And I come back to the central issue that the question presented to the federal district court, i.e., in TeWitt, the ban on the export of water, has never been decided by any court. At some point in time, I think it's fair to say that third parties who have never been in a court proceedings ought to have the right to have the question decided, either for them or against them, unless we can say that those parties were so close to the proceedings in California that they ought to be bound, that somehow McDougall stood in their shoes. I would point out, how could McDougall stand in the shoes of the three Mexicans when the very issue that they were concerned with was the one that he's a stop to raise?
Are you going to argue that, I intend?
Yes, sir, if I might.
Because I wonder why the federal court's judgment did do away with the state court injunction.
Well, I think that
didn't it?
Not really. There were other things that the County of Imperial could have done.
Well, didn't it? Yes, but the injunction was lifted. It was rendered unenforceable by the judgment.
It was rendered unenforceable in the sense that the County of Imperial was restrained from enforcing the regulation. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that McDougall's
duties...
Why do you say
that doesn't violate the Anti-Injunction Act?
Well, okay, I rest on Hale versus BIMCO, number one. I think the holding in Hale versus BIMCO in this court is that third parties simply are not bound by 2283. This court in Mitchum versus Foster said that the test to determine the applicability of 2283 is to look back at the law as it existed before Toosey versus New York. Mr. Justice Frankfurter wrote Toosey versus New York and Hale versus BIMCO, as well as footnoted Hale versus BIMCO.
Well, they may not be bound. They may not. Perhaps the injunction doesn't apply to them. But that doesn't mean the injunction shouldn't continue to apply to the person to whom it applies, namely McDougall.
Well, that's exactly what happened, though, in Hale versus BIMCO. Hale versus BIMCO is on all fours with this case. The state of Florida sued Hale and said, enforce this interstate regulation. Mm-hmm. Went to the Florida Supreme Court, and the Florida Supreme Court, after demur, said, yes, that's constitutional. BIMCO Trading Company, third parties, come in, sue Hale, say, don't enforce that, and I want an injunction barring you from enforcing it. The federal district court issues it. The Florida courts stay proceedings, as have the courts in California, in deference to a final determination of the federal issue. And in that decision, the court held in Hale versus BIMCO that third parties are not bound by the provisions of the anti-injunction statute and proceeded to render unconstitutional the particular regulation in question, and said that they found it very hard to do so after it had been decided constitutional by the highest state court of Florida, but they felt that they had to do it.
But
I would say
it's at least clear that the result of this federal judgment is that the state court injunction is unenforceable against McDougall.
It's unenforceable to the extent that McDougall has commenced selling of water, and I'm not sure what the status of that injunction is anymore after the somewhat Delphic contempt order issued
by the
state courts.
Well, what exception to the Anti-Injunction Act do you think this falls under?
I've said, first of all, the anti-injunction statute doesn't apply because of Hale versus BIMCO and the policies of federalism underlying that. Secondly, though, if we are going to say that the anti-injunction statute applies, we've pled this case in the context of a civil rights proceeding, and I would believe that in that sense that Mitchum versus Foster provides the exception there. I think that to hold 2283 applicable in this case, we're going to have to seriously diminish the holding in Hale versus BIMCO or overrule it. And I would submit that the principles of federalism that this court has announced in a series of cases don't warrant it in this particular fact. One of the principles that we look at in the question of enjoining a state court, and when we say you shouldn't, is we want to allow the state courts to try the cases before them free from interference by federal courts. There is no proceeding pending in a state court of California wherein this constitutional issue is going to be interfered with by any federal district court. The state courts have deferred to the federal courts with respect to the issue. We have not interfered, so that particular policy does not require 2283 be applied in this case.
But in Hale, didn't the Supreme Court of Florida stay all further proceedings in the state courts pending determination by this court?
Yes, it did, and I think that that's exactly what happened in this case. First of all, the Superior Court, as I said in the Delphic order, it said to McDougall, you're ordered to stop selling water 30 days after the Ninth Circuit judgment against you becomes final, and if the county loses in the Ninth Circuit, the thing is stayed until resolution on appeal.
But the Supreme Court of California never said that.
It went to the Court of Appeals because McDougall filed a writ of mandate when he was found in contempt. It went up to the circuit, up to the District Court of Appeals in California, and the District Court of Appeals has stayed any proceedings with respect to the contempt against McDougall pending the outcome of this decision in this court, so far as even citing the case. And it seems to me that two courts in California have specifically deferred.
But not the highest court.
Well, in order to get a deference from the highest court, the Court of Appeals would have had to turn down McDougall's writ of mandamus, and then he would have gone to the state court. The Florida thing is a little different in Hale versus BIMCO because you were dealing in a situation of original jurisdiction in Florida. The original action was brought in the Florida Supreme Court by virtue of some statutes in Florida which allowed initial proceedings in the Supreme Court there. McDougall could not get to the California Supreme Court absent a denial of relief at the Court of Appeals level, and he was granted that relief. Seems to me that the policy that we talk about is when we're in doubt about issuing an injunction, we're to resolve that doubt in favor of allowing the state court proceedings to proceed in an orderly manner to a final decision on the merits. There are no state court proceeding anywhere with respect to getting us a decision on the merits of the simple question provided by these three Mexican nationals. Is the export ban constitutional or not? It's not proceeding in court in the state of California. And I think that when we look at 2283, it uses the word pending proceedings. And I think that those phrases have to have some meaning of currency. Something in the present tense must be occurring. In this case, there is no California court contending that the regulation is constitutional or unconstitutional. It's not before any California court. The only parties contending that the regulation is a constitutional exercise is the County of Imperial. It seems to me that we have not violated any principles of federalism when a third party comes in under this court's decision in Hale versus BIMCO, and there is no decision or proceeding going forward in the state court. We just simply have not violated those principles of federalism upon which 2283 rests. Pardon?
Was there any proceeding pending in the Florida courts?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Was there a proceeding pending in the state courts in Hale?
Yes, there was. In fact, in Hale, pending in the sense that it was commenced, and in Hale, the Florida Supreme Court stayed those proceedings, awaiting a result on the constitutional issues from this court. So in that sense, I think it was pending. They had brought a suit in Florida to specifically enforce the regulation in question.
But your argument here is not even that much of a proceeding pending in the California courts.
No California court is considering the constitutionality of the ban in question. The California Supreme Court has just simply said, we're not going to decide it. And then they footnote us to Altus, Oklahoma versus Carr, which seems to say that the particular export ban is unconstitutional. They hint at it, but they don't come out and say it. I think we have a policy underlying 2283 of avoiding duplication of legal proceedings when a single suit could satisfy the interests of the parties and all of the issues could be resolved. There is only one single suit in which the interests of the parties can be resolved and the questions answered, and that's the suit that is here today.
Proceedings too, does it not?
I think I would agree with you on that. As a matter of fact, the more I thought about the 2283 issue, the more I came to believe that when you're dealing with third parties, 2283 is not applicable, and you're dealing with principles of res judicata, because the analysis that you would go through in res judicata ought to answer most of the questions that deal with 2283, so that would reinforce, in my view, this Court's holding in Hale versus PIMCO that 2283 does not apply to third parties. Because when we have third parties, I think we're talking about res judicata. I would agree with that. I think, finally...
Did you say earlier, Mr. Kronberger, did I understand you to say correctly that you cast your lawsuit as a 1983 lawsuit?
We couched our lawsuit in civil rights terms, indicating that we
believe
our rights...
I see a reference to 1981.
I was getting to that. It says 1981 there. I think the rule in the federal courts is notice pleading, and I think that as we have spelled it out in that cause of action, it can be read as a civil rights cause of action under 1983.
Because you talked about the applicability of the doctrine of Mitchum against Foster.
That's correct, and had I to do it over again today, I would like to change the 1 to a 3 to make that point more explicit, but you're correct. It says 1 in the pleadings, but the pleadings are couched in the terms, I think, of the Civil Rights Act. Now, I do believe the courts have held pleaders to specific numbers when dealing with civil rights actions. We have alleged that there is much more to this than meets the eye, and in that fact, I'll just turn your attention to page 91 of the appendix so that we can see what kind of local interests are involved. The minutes of the hearing when the particular export ban was placed on the property. The attorney for the predecessor in interest, Mr. Sands, he says, Mr. Sands questioned...
Are you talking about the footnote here?
Yes, 91A. Those are the minutes of the proceedings before the Board of Supervisors and the Planning Commission. Mr. Sands questioned if he would be in favor of a limited period of time as previously requested up to 12/31/68. That's to allow the continuation of sale of water to Mexico, and a statement that it would not increase the amount of water exported from the County of Imperial. It would be the same amount of water. Response, Chairman Kilgore stated that in regards to a temporary period of time, quote, 5 minutes would be too much. Yes, we have alleged civil rights allegations in this case, so that it is more than simple interstate commerce, and if we are going to apply 2283, I believe we're within an exception to that. I think that 2283, the final outcome of 2283 being applied in this case, is simply going to be to divest federal district courts of diversity jurisdiction in this circumstance. You are going to be saying, go to the state court.
Well, it isn't diversity jurisdiction. It's if you really mean what you say, it's a federal question case.
It's a federal question case, and the ultimate result of 2283's application would be to tell a plaintiff, such as the plaintiffs here, the respondents, to bring these questions in a state court,
well,
because 2283 would bar you from injunctive relief.
That's what the Anti-Injunction Act does in cases to which it applies. It says if you want to get the injunction set aside, go raise your federal issues in the state court.
Which issued the injunction?
But that applies.
You still could.
Well, we could go to the federal, to a state court, but I think a party isn't.
To the Superior Court, say.
The court that issued the injunction.
Well, we would have had to brought a new lawsuit. The result of that would be 2283 doesn't say thou shalt continue your pending lawsuits. It says thou shalt leave federal court and go start a new lawsuit.
What did the Superior Court, how did the Superior Court rule on your claims originally?
I have no claims. We have never been in the Superior Court.
Well, where did you start? Where did you start the case? Where did you start the case?
In the federal.
I started this case in the federal district court.
Where did McDougal litigate?
McDougal was hit with an injunctive and declaratory relief by the County of Imperial in the Superior Court.
Constitutional grounds,
and the Superior Court said, no, the export ban is not with respect to interstate or foreign commerce.
So the views of the state Superior Court are well known.
Yes, the state Superior
Court. So if you went to the state court, you know what the judgment would be in the Superior Court, but then you may not be bound in the state Superior Court.
That's correct, but I would just for the record say my clients don't want to be in the state court. They have a right to access to the federal court, and for a variety of reasons choose not to be in the state court. Following the line of what happened, McDougal was first told that the restriction was land use oriented and did not burden interstate commerce. It got to the Court of Appeals, and this California Court of Appeals said it's patently unconstitutional. It burdens interstate commerce, and they declared the entire conditional use permit void. And McDougal was left with nothing. McDougal appealed to the California Supreme Court, which sidestepped the issue of what happens in California with respect to a conditional use permit which has an unconstitutional condition attached to it. It sidestepped it by saying you're stopped, and that makes, I think, a good deal of sense because there are thousands of restrictions on conditional use permits in the state of California, very few of which probably rise to the dignity of a constitutional challenge, and I don't think California courts wanted to open their courts to those kinds of challenges.
Did McDougal petition for certiorari to this court?
Yes, he did, and this court determined that the estoppel was an independent state grounds upon which the judgment might rest. Yes, he did. I would like to just briefly at the end say that the federal policies that would be thwarted by application of 2283 and I think the implicit overruling of Hale versus BIMCO would be to tell plaintiffs that 2283 may be used as a forum shopping tool by the respondent or defendant. All they need do is raise 2283 to a third party, and that third party who has never been in a state court is told, gee, you should have started your lawsuit in the state court when we had a federal question with diversity jurisdiction. In conclusion, I would suggest that to apply 2283 to third-party non-litigants would elevate the provisions of that section against the basic fundamental notion and concept that parties ought to be given their day in the court of their choice, and with respect to federal questions, they ought to be able to bring federal questions to a federal court to litigate it. I don't think that Congress ever intended that parties who were not participating in state court proceedings should ever be denied injunctive relief in a federal court when it is properly brought before that court. Thank you.
Do you have anything further, Mr. Harmon?
Briefly, Mr. Chief Justice. I do wish to dispute counsel's assertion that he has pled a 1983 action. I've reviewed the pleading carefully. I only find one reference to the Civil Rights Act, and that starts at page 19. That cause of action is the cause of action pled against McDougal, as I read it, for breach of contract. There is no reference whatsoever to 1983. As a possible exception to the Anti-Injunction Act. Furthermore, at page 121 of the appendix, the court may notice that a notice of reliance on a broader claim was filed by the respondents here, I guess as kind of an amendment to the pleading. Neither was 1983 mentioned in that notice of reliance on a broader claim.
I did any time try to change one to three.
No, sir.
Until just now.
No, Your Honor, they have not. That's great.
Thank you, gentlemen. The case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in the board.